Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Well, good afternoon to another Friday episode of Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Ann, the Radio Chick, and with me is my co-host, Cool Mike. Good afternoon, Cool Mike.
Well, it certainly is a good afternoon, Annie. And how are you this afternoon?
I'm fine. I'm just hoping that we don't have the snafu like we had on Tuesday.
Well, I hope not. Blog Talk Radio solo, I think, has just got a conspiracy against me. So they probably thought I was on again the second time. Anyway, I'm always, as always, excited for all of our shows, but today got something, a little change of pace today.
Well, yesterday I got an email, and I had sent out a message to a bunch of different people inviting them onto the show, and just yesterday morning I get a response from Andrew Ian Dodge's press guy and saying, hey, can we come on the show tomorrow? So last minute I went scrambling around like, okay, trying to remember who I sent stuff out to. And I said, oh, all right, now I know who I'm dealing with. So I said, sure, you know, why not? So he should be calling in shortly. Andrew Ian Dodge is running in the primary in Maine against Olympia Snow. And he's got himself a really tough uphill battle, so hopefully he'll call in shortly. Otherwise, for those that were listening on Tuesday and heard the complete snafus, it appears possibly someone had hacked into my BTR account and got access to my password. So when Cool Mike tried to broadcast for me when I was on my way back from the Newt Gingrich interview, someone cut him off. And then when I got back in on the air and tried to continue with the show, again, the person got in and cut me off. So that's been straightened out for now. And BTR worked with me on that after we finished the show on Tuesday. I was on the BTR for about, oh, God, maybe about half an hour, 45 minutes, trying to figure what was going on. Fortunately, you know, they were able to, you know, go into my account and see what IP addresses and phone numbers we're calling into the show and accessing it. So, like I said, BTR worked hard with me on that one. So hopefully everything's straightened out. And for those that missed the full Newt Gingrich show that Mike and I did, we had a blast with it. I re-edited it and uploaded it again. So if they go into the archives, they'll see the Newt Gingrich interview on there. And we do have a caller, and I do believe this should be my guest. Good afternoon. This is Southern Sense. You've got Annie, your host. Who am I speaking to?
This is Andrew Ian Dodge. How are you doing?
How are you doing today, Andrew?
I'm fine. You probably don't get many callers from Maine, so I think it was a good guess. Guessing the 207 was me.
Actually, we've had callers from far away as Australia.
Oh, that's cool. Well, that's the great thing about the web, is that you are as accessible in your home state as you are anywhere in the world, as long as they're on the Internet.
This is true. This is true. Now, I was giving a small introduction telling our listeners that some basic about you, and I just got as far as saying that you're trying to run in the primary against Olympia Snow, and you've got a bit of an uphill battle. Why don't you tell us a bit about yourself?
Well, yes, it's more like attacking a fortress as a sapper, as a medieval sapper, in the undermining the foundation so it all comes down. It is a gigantic task, but that makes it far more interesting and more challenging. And, I mean, it's easy to jump into an open seat and run if you have all kinds of experience, but it's much more interesting to do it the way I'm doing it, and I would say more rewarding, really, and more engaging. Well, I don't know what you've told you, but I'm a freelance writer based in Maine. My family has been in Maine on my father's side since the 18th century, my mother's side since a similar amount of time. I mean, the 1800s, rather, on my father's side, as in they were here before Maine was a state. My grandfather on my father's side was a part-time lobsterman and boat builder. He built wooden boats during World War II to pick up mines, minesweepers. And my father spent 4 years working for Texaco, then retired back to Maine, where he became an amateur clammer, which is not something that you expect most people to be amateur at. But anyway, he did it. And he also was heavily involved in water testing and keeping the coast of Maine clean and clear and beautiful for everybody to enjoy. I've never been a professional politician. I've never run for any high office, though I've held organizational positions all my life. But I have 2 degrees in politics, and I've worked at think tanks for various causes that, if you want to sum up in a general way, are anti-socialism, pro-freedom, liberty, free market, individual rights, low taxes, you name it. So in other words, the core values of the Tea Party movement that were created, especially the Tea Party patriots, free market, limited government, and fiscal responsibility, are something I've actually been working for since I first got involved in politics in my teens.
All right. Now, you're also involved with the Tea Party, too, aren't you?
I'm former Tea Party Patriots Maine coordinator, and that's Maine, M-A-I-N-E, rather than M-A-I-N, which sometimes gets one in trouble in print. I attended CPAC in 2009, and the one state which was blank was Maine, and I said, I'll be damned if we don't have a Tea Party event on April 15th, and I got home and got in touch with the authorities, unlike, I should say, the Occupy movement, who just show up in a space and take it over and don't bother to get the permits. I went through the rigmarole, got the permits, and had the first event. Not soon thereafter, I realized I was probably better at a higher tier of the Tea Party movement because of my experience. And I became state coordinator for Maine, and I've also done other things in the Tea Party movement, like on behalf of the Tea Party Patriots, I did an 8,000-mile, 26-day speaking tour of the country, which I drove every mile all across the country to Fresno and back. I've appeared on television both domestically and internationally, articles, radio, everything, on behalf of the Tea Party movement, not as a leader or anything, but just as someone who has written articles and understands the sort of base instinct and philosophy that, first of all, instilled the Tea Party movement to be created and that continues and hopefully will continue it for a long time to come. And I firmly believe that if the Tea Party movement strays from its core, its core base, it will start to dissipate its support and suffer in the eyes of the public and in the eyes of people who are aligned to the Tea Party movement, because the minute you start getting off those sort of uniting values, you start losing people here and there. And I think that's a problem that the Tea Party movement has had in the last few months specifically.
All right. Well, you call yourself a fiscal conservative, not necessarily a social conservative. You want to explain that?
I consider myself a social libertarian, however, rather than a social liberal. Now, that may sound like splitting hairs. A social liberal, in my experience and from what I've encountered, is social liberals believe that individuals should be individuals and the state should support whatever their lifestyle choice happens to be, as in the state should quantify it and actively support it, whether it's in making it easier for them to get positions if they declare themselves a minority, or giving them money or giving them breaks or whatever. A social libertarian is more of someone who is, you know, a live and let live conservative, as I've been described. I don't believe government's very good at anything it does, and whenever it tries to get involved in social issues, let's just say prohibition, it fails miserably and generally makes the problem far worse than it was to begin with. I mean, after all, prohibition, first of all, brought us more or less income tax, which we all hate, because the federal government had to figure out another way of paying, of replacing the over third of its income that it got from alcohol taxation. And secondly, it brought this country what we know as the modern organized crime. I'm not saying that the people who pushed a prohibition were not well-meaning, but this is the problem when you use the hammer of government on a social issue. On many social issues, I think it should be up to the states. If it is not specified in the Constitution, it should be a state issue, and I have no problem whatsoever if one state bans everything and the state next door, as long as they're a consenting adult, we ban nothing. That is America. That is what we are, a United States of America. We are not a unitary state. And I think the original founding fathers realized that and thought and were wise. And whenever we meddle, like trying to introduce constitutional amendments to ban this and ban that, we ruin their grand plan.
What's your stance on now where they have now passed the law defining marriage as between one man and one woman?
At a national level, I'm against it. It's not government's business. It's not a federal government issue. It's a state issue.
Well, I don't think government on any level should define marriage, because for me, I know you're a deist, but for me, marriage is a religious ceremony.
Yes, of
and
course.
Each religion defines marriage upon their own tenets.
I have no problem with a civil union. I agree with you. I was going to make that point. Ultimately, it's a matter for the states, and it shouldn't even be a matter for the states. It should be government should get out of the business of marriage, because what people don't understand is a marriage license is a tax. You're trying to encourage people to get married, but you tax them for it. How does this work? You understand? Yet ultimately, yes, you're right. There's a difference between the civil contract and marriage, which is done in a religious point of view. I mean, I got married in a chapel to my lovely wife. However, the state shouldn't be able to tell me where and when I should marry, nor should it necessarily sanction it. If we're dumb enough not to get a civil contract when we get married, that's our problem. But you and I agree on that point.
All right. Well, explain exactly what you are as a deist, because some people get confused about that.
Deism is I believe it's an 18th century manifestation, and you could argue reaction to the religious wars of on the European continent between Protestants and Catholics, and between actual Protestants themselves. And it's deism, as in deus, the Roman word for, the Latin word for God. It means you believe in a higher power, but you're not necessarily taking one wise man who is inspired by God over another. But it's different from universalism. It's an easy way of describing, saying, do you believe in God? Yes. Are you a Christian? No. That dichotomy can be made. And it's some would argue, if you want to get down to brass tacks, that deists are more rational than some sects of religion. They're more rationalist. There is some belief that there are people of certain religious beliefs that believe God is proactive in modern terms, as if you pray for something, it will happen. A deist is less inclined to believe that, and I think they've been criticized as saying the clockworker theory. Do you know what the clockmaker theory is?
No.
That a higher power created this thing called the universe, wound the sucker up and let it go, as if it's some sort of experiment, for lack of a better term, where there's a higher power that brought about the Big Bang or whatever it was, but that higher power is not involved in everybody's day or day-to-day life. And it's more rational, it's less fatalistic or predeterminist than some other religions.
Andrew,
rather than get into deep theology, which would take us the rest of the day.
I have with me my co-host, Cool Mike. Let me introduce him.
Hello.
Hello, Andrew. How are you?
Hi.
Thank you for joining us.
Well. It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure.
Well, now that we've kind of done the intro, let's get our hands dirty and talk some politics, shall we?
I never do that, so I'm not sure I'll be able to handle it.
Well, Andrew, this is kind of a tongue-in-cheek question, but obviously with the Tea Party, you're a racist and a Nazi and all the other bad things that they name myself and Annie and everyone else who basically believes in that thing called the Constitution. How do you, as a Tea Party, address just these absolute, beyond ridiculous accusations? Go ahead.
There's a wonderful picture of me backstage at the St. Louis Tea Party event that happened in 2010, in which I addressed 14,000 people. There's a video of it online as well. And there's a picture of me standing next to pretty much a Technicolor. There was a black guy. There were young woman, my wife, who's slightly older than the young woman, an old sort of guy in his 50s, and me, and then a young guy. It reflected the actual Tea Party movement. One of the funniest experiences I had in St. Louis was this guy walked up to me, and he's someone I still talk to, and he said, I won't go into the details because obviously this is not a late-night event, but he basically said, I've just been called a cracker racist bleep, bleep, bleep by someone, because the person didn't realize that the guy writing this was, in fact, a young black guy. Hello, you still there?
Yeah, I'm like, wow.
Yeah,
Mike, haven't we had that occur to a bunch of our friends here on BTR? People will turn around and send them a little message either in the chat room or call in and call them names, not realizing the person that's broadcasting happens to be black?
All the time. I mean, that's one of the reasons I asked the question to Andrew, because it's almost beyond ridiculous when a person believes in the Constitution, and as Andrew is doing, we're the little people. Many of the people we've had, Andrew, are the same people in your shoes. One of Annie's co-hosts is also in Michigan trying to do the same thing. And for some reason, if we challenge the establishment of government, which we have known to be corrupt and their non-constitutional ways, somehow all of us are, all the bad names you can think of and the kitchen sink included.
Wait for it. You probably don't get diabolist. I get that. But I get that from farther to the right. There's someone else in the race who is, well, his supporters tend to be more from the Constitution Party than they are from the Republican Party. And they don't, well, one of them told me to my face, I have no business running for the United States Senate because I'm not a Christian, and only Christians should be able to run for office in this country. because we're a Christian nation. And I sort of said, and you call yourself a constitutionalist? Yes. And I said, except there's a little bit about this. Anyway, you get that, unfortunately, on our right. And the problem is, and it's incredibly tempting for journalists, you know, you just go to people who there are groups that are glomming onto the Tea Party movement that said, oh, yeah, we're Tea Party now. Change your name, cross out whatever they called themselves beforehand, whether it's John Birch Society or whatever, cross it out, we're now Tea Party. Journalists go to them and they say, you know, and they mouth off and they fit their cliche. What they don't do is talk to me or a couple of many of my friends across the country who are non-Christian, Jewish, black, gay, young, old, from whatever region. They don't like talking to us because we're no fun. They like going to the nutcases who say, well, you know, one of the classic comments I got from one of these people was, you know, we're a very open-minded – no, this person said after Don't Ask, Don't Tell came out, and I can make a physical case whether it was a bad idea, but that's irrelevant right now, said, well, I'm not being homophobic. At least in this country, we allow them to exist, gay people. This is someone who claims to be Tea Party and claims to believe in the Constitution and freedom and liberty, and they said that. And unfortunately, that's who the left are going to, and that makes it easy. And the Tea Party movement has had to fight since its inception from these people coming in, you know, speaking the moderate, what we consider to be the accurate Tea Party line, only to take an organization over or a branch over and then spout this stuff. And it's a problem. And the Tea Party movement, in a sense, like I am as a candidate, is in the middle of the Republican Party. You have the moderates like Snow and Collins and the establishment, and you have the Birch Society, who believed Eisenhower was a communist spy, by the way, and those sort of people on the, I hate to call it far right, but the far right. And then you have people who believe in the Constitution and are open-minded and, you know, don't want necessarily government preaching one line or other, but believe the U.S. is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and then that there's no religious requirement to run for office, as it says in the Constitution, and that we should devolve power as low as possible so individuals have more control of their own destiny. That is the center of the right, rather than being centrist right. That is what the right always was meant to believe. And the fact that we are being lumped in with these people who are actually not for limited government, because if you're calling for a constitutional amendment defining marriages between a man and a woman, if you're calling for an abortion ban as part of the Constitution and including some other things, you are increasing the size and power of the federal government exponentially. And you cannot be for limited government and call for these things, yet you still find people who claim to be Tea Party and for limited government calling these things when they in fact are not. And I think that's the problem. The Tea Party movement needs to redefine itself and bring it back to those core principles, which are simple and easy to explain to anybody who doesn't care about politics, like obviously we do.
That's a great definition right there. I think that not only is that self-explanatory, but I think my friend, that was in such a layperson terms, because realistically, I don't know why it is, but sometimes we have a problem in acknowledging problems. And in many, many ways, some part of the Tea Party has lost touch with its own, not only its own base, but it does need to redefine itself, because a certain percentage of the Tea Party in the upper echelon, once again, you know, they turned out to be basic Republicans, Michelle Bachmann and many of the others. And I think that's a great I just think that explanation was almost so simple that a fourth grader could understand what you were saying.
Thank you. Well, you're welcome to cut it up and send it to me because I might use it again. There's nothing worse than saying something that people then go, oh, God, what did I say? But
all right. Well, wait a minute.
I think ultimately,
with that being said, Senator, I'm going to throw an issue at you. You are now the senator. Okay,
yes, sir.
Placed on your desk right now.
with 5 minutes at 2:30, it is Eastern Standard Time, 2:25. Okay, at 2:30, you are going to vote to renew the Patriot Act and all the extensions that that absolutely wonderful, tremendous, intelligent President George W. Bush passed, along with his new apprentice, Chocolate King Barack Obama. So it comes before you. How do you vote?
No, because I think it's the Patriot Act was passed under duress, and it was created out of emotion. And I'm not blaming those people who created it out of emotion, because this country had never been attacked like that before. And you can't blame people. You're not saying, oh, they were evil and they were trying to take away our rights. However, to continually pass the Patriot Act and not reexamine it after a decade is wrong. It's fundamentally wrong. And there are lots of aspects which are ineffective, fundamentally only affect honest people, and the bad people get around it, and that are inherently anti everything that this country believes in.
Okay, now just yesterday, the Senate passed the new defense bill, and in it they have a section where now any terrorist, it doesn't say Islamic terrorist, any terrorist, whether they're caught outside of the United States or within the border, must go through military tribunal. What's your take on that?
That's a difficult one, because they don't define terrorist. And ultimately, when it comes to bills in Congress, it's about the definition. It's just like the Internet kill switch, which Olympia Snowe, by the way, introduced to the Senate, and it went down. You need to see the language, and the problem is they make these bills so long it's difficult to look at the language. Now, I've been involved in discussions over, say, an American who becomes an enemy combatant with Al-Qaeda, who actively is fighting against his fellow Americans in the military, when you say you're no longer a citizen, I can't remember what the technical term is, but they have renounced their American citizenship, whether they have the same rights as an American citizen. That is an argument, and that is a nuance which needs to be discussed. However, when you pass something, as they seem to be doing in D.C. now, which does not have specific language in it, it is very difficult, because they assume good intentions. Congress is really good at this. They assume good intentions on the part of all parties involved. Then that's not necessarily the case. I mean, there have been presidents who have, excuse my language, abused their power in immense ways in our history, and yet there are some who haven't. So you cannot assume the genuine nature of whoever's following you. And I have a very hard time with some of these bills being shoved through, because the language is so vague, and it's almost as if they go, well, you know, we need to do something about this because people are worried. Let's pass this law and let the judges decide what it means. And that's wrong. These are legislators. They're supposed to be writing legislation which works as a law, which any yutz on the street can say, oh, this is what this law, and they can understand it. They don't need a lawyer to understand it. And that's my biggest problem with all these kind of things, whether it's SOPA or PIPA or Internet kill switch or all the rest of these laws, because it's so important to get it right so it doesn't get abused.
All right. Now, Andrew, you have a website, and
yes.
The website is?
www.dodgeforsenate.com.
Oh, great. Well, I have the website up on the show page, so anyone can click on it. I also put it up in the chat room. Want to let you know that the chat room is open. Want to welcome Dr. Jones to the chat. And the call-in line is 917-889-3675. You're listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Annie, the radio chick, my co-host, Cool Mike, and I have a special interview today with Senate candidate from Maine, Andrew Ian Dodge. Andrew, have you seen this new EPA regulation that has just been proposed? It's 893 pages.
So in other words, they're being succinct as usual. And by the way, on that page length, Senator Snow has been known to say, "Well, I don't have obviously, I didn't have obviously have time to read Obamacare when she voted it out of committee." And my argument is, if, when I become senator, I'm going to get together with some of my sensible colleagues and make sure that laws should be no longer than 50 pages. If you can't sit down with a glass of scotch as a senator, put your feet up and read it in less than an hour, there's something wrong with that bill.
I like the glass of scotch.
Well, you know, come on. Some of these things are pretty dry. I'm being fair. You know, it's a give and take thing. You know, let's be fair.
We should make it down with the laws. Just put on a postcard.
Yeah, well, exactly. I would love to see it 10 pages. I mean, the fact that we even allow our politicians to say, as Republican and Democrat, our politicians to say, well, it was. Do you know how long it was? Of course I didn't have time to do it. That's why I have staff. Well, then what the hell are we sending them there for? Really? Honestly? What? You're a legislator. Legislation is part of the name of your occupation. If you are not involved in the creation of the legislation, how are you able to call yourself a legislator? Or am I just being insane? Probably.
All right. Well, what about this legislation that our legislatures have written by lobbyists?
I haven't. Unfortunately, that was a long way, winded way of saying I haven't had a chance to look at it because I've been up to other things. I apologize. By the way, let me tell your listeners, my blog, my website is in the process of one of its many evolutions. And the information is there, but it don't worry that it might not look as slick and perfect as everybody else's site. It's evolving. Don't judge my site, man. You know.
Well, the bottom line is here. It doesn't matter what state, doesn't matter where. But here's the bottom line. You have Mr. Dodge, obviously a person like us, a person who struggles, a person who is believes in this country. And wanting to take on people that clearly, I don't go by what people say. I go by how they vote. And
exactly.
Clearly, Ms. Snow, these people better hope I never become president. Because I'll tell you, I'll put ropes around their neck in a second. These people have so violated the Constitution. And in every single phase, deliberately and blatantly, that if this were 1776 or whatever years, these people would be shot on sight. I mean, their trial would take place in a, you know, just in a quick coffee shop or in a tavern. Mrs. Snow has teamed up with some of the worst, and it doesn't matter what party, but just some of the worst constitutionalist politicians we have in office that have just basically tried to erode the great foundation of our Constitution and Declaration that the fathers set forth. And it's just sickening. The worst thing is most of us are sitting around watching it happen.
But, I mean, this is a classic example of her arrogance. And as I said, that's why I like to describe her as this sort of castle on the hill. And me as sort of, you know, some character coming up with his sappers undermine the wall. She was asked, challenged on not having, everybody else was having these town hall meetings. She said, I don't need town hall meetings. Everybody knows my stance anyway. Wait, look, the aristocracy in Europe, in Britain and in the other countries that have aristocracy, they don't get away with that crap now. So why should we take it from a senator? It's a bit like Nancy Pelosi acts the same way. Oh, I need a 757 of my own. I'll constantly on call so I can go back and forth to my constituency with my family members at taxpayer expense. Wait, the Queen in the UK doesn't have a royal yacht anymore that she paid for because everybody said, no, that's too extravagant, even though it was her money who was paying for it. And we, as a nation who overthrew a king because of all the aspects of aristocracy, are stuck with these politicians who are treating us like merely ignorant peasants. And it pains me. I mean, obviously I'm a politics geek. I've been reading it since I was a child, and as you probably both are as well. But the fact that these people that are in D.C. are fundamentally detracted not only from the people they wish to serve, but from the actual idea of what they are meant to do as a job and in D.C., it's a fundamental affront to everything that makes America great. And, of course, you realize that everybody scoffs at Europe and the EU going, ha, ha, ha. Well, you look at the EU, what is it? Brussels is a centralizing power base that's trying to become a unitary state where countries disappear and become all part of this giant amalgam. What is D.C.? It's a central location which is sucking all the power out of the states and reducing the sovereignty of individual states so it controls all the power and all the leader, which is cutting out the state governments and limiting the power of the people. You want to see your future? Look at Europe. That's where we're heading. And Obama and Pelosi and the so-called progressives, the social democrats in D.C., whether on whatever side of the aisle they are, that's what they want. They want to be like Brussels. That's really what they like, where they can say, well, you know, you voted these Republicans in, or you voted these libertarians in who want to legalize, you know, lower the age of drinking age to 18 because, you know, whatever, legalize drugs, do this, do that. Well, you can't do it. Why? Because we're the federal government, and we control all these purse strings, and we'll cut you off, and your state will go broke if you don't do what we say. That's completely against the way this country was founded. We are a United States of America. We are not a United State of America. If we wanted that, we would be like Russia. We're not. We are individual states with individual needs. We are 50 separate tiny nations. We are not one big nation. We identify ourselves as Americans, but ultimately we are not one big nation. We are 50 separate ones that come together voluntarily because it's all in our best interest, or however long that exists.
Well, it sounds like then if you were ever to get into the Senate, if you should be lucky enough to do that, which I think you will cross our fingers, and hopefully you'll start going viral soon and push Nancy, not Nancy, I'm sorry about that, Olympia Snow out of the way. What would you be working to eliminate in the federal government? What would be your first major projects?
Well, my first major project, and as I promised the 14,000 people that I addressed in St. Louis, is my first project is, as we have young adults under the age of 21 fighting for us all over the world and dying and being blown up for the cause of liberty and freedom, I would lower the drinking age in this country to 18, because it's absolutely ridiculous that we turn these teenagers into adults through war and all the things they have to do, yet we treat them as children when they come home and visit their parents. I think that's an affront to everything that this country believes in. And it would be help a lot of families when their single military children prefer to stay in Britain or Germany or somewhere else, because then they're treated like an adult and they can actually have a social life. That's just a pet peeve of mine, which I thought always existed, and it's against natural justice. But the other things that I would make sure that I would stand on is no internet taxation, no regulation of the internet. I would make sure to keep government as far away from the internet as possible, because it works rather well now, and they're trying to meddle. And every time they meddle, they make things worse. Fiscally, I'm against the balanced budget amendment for reasons I've mentioned earlier. However, we need to cut spending.
How would you go about doing that?
Well, I don't think the problem is, and this sounds like an excuse that every one of the presidential candidates is saying, we don't know the full story of how they're spending, because a lot of the spending in D.C. is actually hidden. And we really need to significantly look at the roles of various entities in D.C. For instance, I would do away with the FCC, because the FCC is a 1950s institution which is trying to address the modern age, and it's doing it poorly. And they're spending all this money, and they're having no effect on anything. And it's just employment for people. There shouldn't be an FCC. There are all kinds of government entities which probably should be returned to the states. I'm not going to do a Perry here, so I don't want to say the three things, because you know that always scares you. I think we need to reassess, not cut immediately, but reassess our foreign aid. We need to reassess where we have our military, abroad, not bringing them all home, because that would be, I'm not Ron Paul, because sticking your head in the sand and saying, I hope no one attacks us, ain't going to work. Now, it didn't work when we were a new country, and it certainly won't work now. But we need to reassess our commitments abroad. We need to reform our military into a way which reflects the modern realities of as war as it stands, rather than merely having a military which reflects the needs and the wants of politicians in various parts of the country. Politicians who want to keep a base here or to keep this defense industry open or whatever. And there are lots of other things that you can do, but the problem is you can't, unless you have access to all this information, it's very difficult to come by the information to realize what can be cut and what can't be cut. And that's always the politician incumbents don't have. And they keep us in the dark deliberately, so we look like idiots when we try to run against a sitting senator.
All right. Well,
what kind of cash does she have sitting and waiting to just crush you?
She has a $3 million war chest.
Jesus.
And she has $32 million in the bank, I believe. But you do realize that Snow has never had a primary opponent, and she's also never had a real opponent in whenever she's run, basically. The Democrat.
Well, the people who own her make damn sure she doesn't.
Trust me, the people that own her are her and her husband. LePage, our governor, his college was paid for by Snow's first husband, and he got into university because he got him the SAT in French. So the governor's office is controlled by the Snow family. You know, anybody high up in Maine politically is they owe their fealty to Snow. As I said, Maine is like an aristocracy. None of the TV networks I announced, and they didn't report on it. The fundamental reason is because she has said, don't report on any of my primary opponents, and they just don't. I could paint my body red, white, and blue naked and run down the middle of Augusta or Bangor or Portland, and they wouldn't report on it. Seriously.
That's a picture I just didn't want to see in my mind.
Yeah,
well, and I mean, it gives to the fact that clearly...
I would have a tiny thing covering that bit, so don't worry.
But, you know, it really explains how, regardless, many of the individuals we've had who are running in Arizona, whether they're running in Florida, Michigan, express the same concerns, that the little guys are nothing. They're dilettantes to basically the huge corporate-bought media. And, I mean, it just reaffirms my point that not only is George W. Bush, before Obama came along, the worst president ever, he is truly an absolute socialist that in many, many ways the Republican Party has just been jeopardized. It's been purchased in the same way George Soros owns the Democrats and many of the others. The Republican fat cats care less about people like us. We are in the way. Even paying us minimum wage is a problem.
But fundamentally, as I said, one of the things I bring to the table is I've been working against the European Union, and I've been working against socialism and this kind of stuff in Europe as well as here. And, you know, I came back to the U.S. with my new wife, and I looked at our political parties. George Bush is a Christian Democrat in the European sense, like the CDU in Germany or like the various other countries, and the Democrats are the Social Democrats. So this whole BS, excuse my language, of that you hear from Republicans is we don't want to turn the U.S. into a European-style democracy. We've got it. We've had it since FDR, probably, and certainly since Jimmy Carter and that era. And you know, Johnson, we have a welfare state. We have people, you know, when you hear a Republican discuss something called compassionate conservatism, if you don't want to find a sick bag, you need to. Because what that means is, okay, we're going to have the same big government programs that mollycoddle people, but we're just, instead of doing it for social justice reasons, it's going to be done because of some reason, and generally Republicans in this country and in Europe, the Christian Democrats, as they're so named, the mollycoddling and the meddling and the getting involved in people's lives where they don't need to be. It's instead supposedly inspired by some greater good, some religiously driven greater good. But the socialist movement, all the left parties that run things like the Labour Party in the UK, they were started by Christian socialists. So in a sense, you have this ridiculous situation in parts of Europe, and starting to in the U.S., is you have big government socialists who have against big government Republicans. And they are both reaching for the same sort of mushy middle thing, where they think they're doing good, but they're meddling people's lives, and people don't learn to live on their own, don't learn to fail and get back on their feet. And they stand in the way of people who are entrepreneurs. They stand in the way of people who want to better themselves. And you have things like the ridiculousness of the welfare trap, where if you got you could get a full-time job and earn less after taxes because the stupid taxes are so high than you would if you got government handouts, if you know how to play the system right. This is ludicrous. No one who ever came, Bismarck, when he came up, who came up with a modern welfare state, didn't envision, oh, well, I'm going to create an entire class of people who just remain on the government dole the entire time. He genuinely meant it, and as do many of these people when they talk about it theoretically, in lifting people up out of poverty and giving them a chance. Instead, what you have is this huge bureaucracy that keeps people down, because the people working in the bureaucracy need to justify their existence. And if everybody on their roll suddenly drops off welfare and becomes entrepreneurs and is wealthy, they don't have anything to do anymore. Now, government rewards failure.
Exactly.
Private business rewards success. And the problem with what do you want to call it, big government republicanism or Christian conservatism or compassionate conservatism, is that it rewards mediocrity. It doesn't champion people who do well. I mean, look at who we as a society are celebrating. And you had this disgraceful situation, and ironically coming from both the hard left and some on the right, of trashing Steve Jobs. The left said Jobs did all these wonderful things, but didn't create enough jobs for Americans. And on the right, they were saying, well, he didn't instill the right values in America, whatever milieu they come from. The man changed, and his company changed the face of the world. He changed how we interact with each other. He made lots of people very wealthy through innovation and entrepreneurship and cleverness and thinking outside the box. The man is a true American icon, and 2 days after he died, you saw people on the left and the right both trashing him. And I think it's an absolute disgrace.
Yeah, Andrew, you're absolutely right. We do have a caller in on the line.
Hello.
Erica 720, you're on the air live with Southern Sense and our guest, Andrew Ian Dodge. Who am I speaking to?
Yes, how you doing? They call me James.
James?
How y'all doing today? Yes.
All right.
Well, I was just listening to the conversation, and then I'm hearing about what you guys saying about the welfare and all this type of stuff. You know, it seems like the conservative party just don't have a heart no more. They want to come down on the poor so hard. When I hear Newt call poor kids, you know, trouble kids, and them the kids that, you know, that really need, how can he talk about poor kids and say only thing they know how to do is sell drugs, so that'll make them, you know. But when you think about, he loved the point, friendly, well, maybe he need to go in the suburb and look at all them suburb kids who doing all that school shooting and then dressing up looking like monsters, wearing all that black and all that. The kids that live in the suburb, majority of them parents are conservative. But, you know, we got to get off this trip thinking everybody looking for him. If we can go around the world and help everybody around the world, because ain't no jobs right here in America right now, because under the conservative way, because that's what's going to kill America, the way that you guys think. You know, if you ain't got none, that's your tough love, you know. But, you know, that's what's going to take this country down, and the first people who going to suffer behind it are going to be you conservatives, because y'all think everybody's stuck on stupid but y'all, and everybody leeching off y'all, nobody else working, doing nothing. So that's y'all idea of keep pointing your finger, trying to put a group of people down. But you know what y'all need to do, and y'all call yourself family, because look who y'all Clark Kent is today. One of the biggest crooks out there, and now y'all behind one of the biggest crooks that ever ran anything, cheating on his wife, taking money from people, but he's like Superman to you guys. So I think y'all lost y'all family value because y'all against so much because this black man sitting there and that white
man. Well,
hang
on a second. Hang on. You made a lot of accusations there.
By the way, I support Herman Cain. Just thought I'd let you know.
Well,
I support Herman Cain.
That's why he's going through what he's going.
Well, no, you know, hang on a second. He made an awful lot of accusations. First, let's start with our guest, who's the candidate. You can go ahead and respond. I don't know that I will, because...
First of all, my father, as I said, if you're listening earlier, my father came from... His father was an amateur lobsterman. Well, no, was a part-time lobsterman and a boat builder. That's working class as it comes. I'm sorry, my father's background is working class. I'm not, you know...
Y'all need to get a grip. Because that's what y'all do.
That's not true. That is not true. Why, if that's the case, why are the leading Republicans, I mean the leading rich people in this country, of the top 20, most of them are Democrats?
Y'all some hurtful people. Y'all need to get on your knees, ask God.
Oh, sorry about that. Thank you for the call, James. Have a nice day.
Well, yeah, no, the bottom line is that I think you're right. You're basically, I know Annie came from a very humble house, and so did I. My father worked for General Motors. My grandfather was in one of the first sit-down strikes against basically these type of people that supposedly y'all support. And, you know, once again, it kind of goes back to my first question, Mr. Senator, is that we've been thrown labels and names, and without any kind of really factual research, you have idiots that just take the ball and run with it. Or not idiots, because obviously you have huge corporate interests, huge media interests, that I'll bet you by the time your primary rolls around, when you bring a threat to Mrs. Snow, you're going to be a pedophile and a mugger and a rapist.
Well,
and
actually,
you don't have to
worry about it. I've already been called all those things by the person to my right. They were saying I wasn't an American citizen. I was a diabolist. Because, you know, all libertarians are actually closet libertines and want to legalize pedophilia. Yeah, of course. Yeah, all right. I became a libertarian. The first thing that came to my mind was legalizing. What? But that, you get that. The problem is, and actually he made a really good point. One of his points that he should have made and instead of went on this rant, but they're programmed to put on that rant, is what is happening to Cain. See, personally what I think was Cain is threatening the establishment, and you have certain establishment people on the right playing the game of the left and sometimes actively supporting the game on the left, which is exactly what's happening sort of in my case. You have this person to my right feeding information out to the mainstream media to their prejudices, and you combine that and you take people down. Now, you know, Cain may be guilty of all these things he's been accused of. I haven't seen enough to make me believe it. Because, you know, all kinds of stuff gets wheeled out all the time. However, it disgusts me to see supporters of other candidates, one starting with a P, who dropped precipitously, partly due to Cain, going out there and declaring the guy guilty on the basis of what's coming out in the left media. Conservatives eat their own, and we got to stop doing that. I mean, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You can't. I'll give you a good example, which is not even running for office. Uncle Ted, as I call him, Ted Nugent, Detroit rocker, has done lots for poor kids. He's done, he brings people from the inner cities to introduce them to things they've never done. He has charities. He speaks up for conservative causes always, self-reliance and all the rest of it. Who pillories him the most, the left or the right? It's the right. He's not Christian enough. He plays loud music. He plays the devil's. It doesn't matter. We eat our own. And what the right has to realize is the left takes care of their own. There are people on the left who find everything that the Occupy movement is doing is a disgrace. Do they trash them in the press? No, because they know there's going to be an eventually a time when the 2012 election comes that they don't want those people to say, ooh, there were Democrats calling me whatever, so I'm not going to vote. Because ultimately in this country we have a choice between two parties. And the Democrats know that they need to keep these people on board. Republicans, on the other hand, and conservatives are incredibly good at throwing their own to the wolves. And that's exactly what's happened to Cain, and that's to a certain extent happened to me. And I'm sure it will happen to a lot of other candidates who are not establishment or not, you know, sort of hard right, who are very loyal. And we can't do that because we need good people. And if it looks like, unless you've worked your way up the greasy pole and everybody owes you favors like Snow, that you're going to be put through a meat grinder and crapped out the other end of the body politic, no one decent who isn't sullied is going to run. Why would they? I mean, I have friends who think I'm nuts for doing this. We should celebrate people who get off their butts and run for office. We shouldn't denigrate them, criticize them for their principles, for their ideas, for what they believe, fine. But don't, on the right, don't tear people apart, their personality. We only help the left.
It actually, it goes back to the Ronald Reagan dogma. You know, thou shalt not speak ill of another Republican. And unfortunately, this is what's been happening a lot lately. And we got another call. This happens to be a friend of ours. His name is Thomas. Good afternoon, Thomas. You're on the air with Southern Sense and our guest, Andrew Ian Dodge.
Hey, what's going on, Annie?
All right. How you doing, Thomas? You got a question for Andrew?
Mm-mm. I just have a comment. That individual last caller don't speak for all black people. And, yeah. And
I never assumed he did.
No, I know. I'm just saying. And I knew who he was when he, just by his tone of voice, because he attacked me on the show one night on and he said some really nasty things. But it just goes back to this. It's called the crab in the barrel syndrome, because I choose to think for myself. First of all, I like to think for myself. I don't follow crowds. I choose who I support based on my own assumptions. And just to be lumped in a crowd like that, and just him just lumping without thinking, it just irritates me. And I apologize that you had to listen to that dribble.
Yeah, I think our guest has strong skin. No, the senator.
I'm sure he's.
Trust me, my friend. The stuff been said about me already would make most people cry, but I just laugh. My only big problem is that people tell me not to laugh too much, because then they think I don't notice. I do notice people's comments, but man, people get creative and it's really funny. It's just it's like when they turn around and they know nothing about someone's history and they say, "You rich people born with a spoon in your mouth," and all this stuff, and it turns out the guy has worked himself up from the shop floor and was a one parent family back in the '60s, and he owns a corporation and he's this evil guy. And you're just saying, don't assume nothing. We're in the U.S. We celebrate our entrepreneur, and we give people, or at least we used to give them, the means where you can start out lowly, not very much. You work your butt off. You go to college. You study, and you make something of yourself. And you can do that in this country.
I don't think anybody's against that. I just think most of us really believe. What would be our so-called Tea Partiers, is we believe that those kind of issues and programs all need to be at local and state levels. The federal government,
exactly.
The federal government's job is defined by the Constitution very, very well. And with that being said, we're going to kind of put you in the no-spin zone here, Mr. Senator, to be elected. I'm going to throw three quick questions at you.
Okay.
And immediate responses. Stay or go? The Department of Homeland Security.
Go.
Department of Energy.
Go.
Supreme Court nominees, lifetimes or limited sentences?
Lifetimes.
Okay. Those were my questions. I like to ask these questions regarding, because like I said, people talk, if you were to listen to George W. Bush, of course, he sounds like Ronald Reagan. But of course, his programs were otherwise. And I like to see in candidates when they want to cut government, when they want to reduce government, that obviously indicates, and that's one of the reasons, if I'm not mistaken, you were against the balanced budget, because basically they want to balance it with all the pork, all these departments and all this heavy weight.
Has it stopped from any state from spending itself to oblivion? No, because what you need to do, and this is what we're all saying. I mean, you know, we're all coming from the same point of view. Don't just say I want a balanced budget amendment. Read what the damn amendment says. There are so many opt outs in that sucker, it'd make your eyes blush. It's sort of like a marriage contract that says I take you as my wife, except for if I see a hot woman walking across the street. Or, you know, you lose an arm, or, you know, it's kind of, that's the way it reads, because it's not straightforward. Besides the fact, if the founding fathers wanted a balanced budget amendment in our Constitution, they would have put it there. You know what I mean? These politicians always like to pass the buck. In this state, what they're famous for is they put it on a ballot. We don't want to spend this money, man, you know, because they'll hate us, because we'll have to raise our taxes. I know what we'll do. We'll have a bond issue and put it to the people by a plebiscite. That's basically politicians getting out of their job. We send them there as our representatives to make decisions. You don't send them there so that then they send it back and go, you know, well, you've got to decide this because I don't have the moral courage to do it. And that's the fundamental problem we have. And they like making it so they don't get blamed when things go awry. And that's what the balanced budget amendment would do.
All right, I agree with that. Now, what about term limits then?
I'm against term limits because we have term limits. They're called elections.
How about the senators being elected or being appointed by the states?
Nope. I think first of all, that's a real vote loser. Yep. I've been the Tea Party movement has been discussing this. I said, so you're going to go out and spread the word that I want to take away your right to vote for senator. How is that going to go down? I mean, quite literally, we want to, as Americans who want people to be involved in their local government, we want to enfranchise people, not disenfranchise them. They feel powerless. They feel like they have less say in their future and what happens to them. And anything that is seen as reducing the power that they have to say things, have their say, is wrong, and that's why that would be catastrophic to anybody who proposed it. And have you seen some of the state legislatures in this country? Would you want them to pick senators? And you would have fewer.
Yes, my point is obviously in the Constitution it states that. I'm not against taking any votes away from the people, but I am a constitutionalist.
But there are people who say, oh, you're a constitutionalist, therefore you don't believe in the amendment that did away with slavery, or the voting of women because it wasn't in the Constitution. I think that argument gets a bit silly after a while and pedantic. But I think the fundamental idea of passing an amendment to the Constitution has to be so well thought out. We are meddling with a great document that was written by incredibly wise men who saw what bad governments had done to Europe and the waste that it left Europe in. And we need to be very cautious about meddling with their idea, and adding an amendment to the Constitution meddles with their idea. There were things they got wrong, but I really don't think, you know, it's unreasonable. Term limit 6 years, you'd get rid of them. You know what we do need to do, however, is we need to make it less easy for incumbents. Like, okay, I will give you an example of the state of Maine. You're going to love this. In order to get on the primary ballot against Olympia Snow, I have to get 2,000 signatures out of 1.2 million people in Maine, which is a state which is the size of all of Great Britain, I would add. They have to be Republicans. They have to be collected by registered Republicans who come from Maine. And the time period is January 2nd to March 15th. You understand what Maine is like in the winter, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Incumbency protection much?
Yeah. I would say that basically we know who passed those laws.
Mm. Oh yeah, and I mean, this sounds distinctly cynical, but I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to pull something else, because they do. I mean, quite literally, that has happened, and it happens in other parts of the country, in other parts of the country as well. So what I think the Tea Party movement nationally needs to do is figure out ways of reducing the benefits and the built-in advantage that incumbents have, so that they're easier to take down if they get, you know, stuck in. Although I love what we're doing. They did to Barney Frank. Can't get rid of him, so just redistrict him.
So how would you? How would you, as a candidate, how would you approach, let's say, for example, the illegals and border security? I'll throw you. Let's say we're in a town hall meeting in Maine, and you call on me for the question. I would say my main concern, I'm very concerned about these illegals for the simple fact I think they're purposely being allowed in to drive wages down of simple middle class people. And obviously, if we're on a war on terror, which we weren't by that idiot, we need to seal the borders first before we do anything else. What would you do as an individual if elected?
I would take a different tack to the driving down wages. I think it's, well, there are certainly parties that assume that any immigrants that come in illegal would vote one way or the other. So it's against their better interest to allow, to prevent them from coming in, because, you know, that there is some evidence to that. I think we certainly need to put a wall up on the Mexican border. Maine is slightly less important, because you have some good protection on the northern border of Maine. It's called winter, woods, and bears. And wolves. And nasties. I mean, after all, there was a reason they stuck that big international conference in an island in northern Canada, on an island in a lake surrounded by hundreds and hundreds, thousands of acres of forests. That's called inbuilt protection. So it's slightly different than having a dry desert between you and the country next door to you. But we fundamentally have to prevent people from coming in. Reagan had an amnesty for illegal immigrants as well, and all it did was encourage more. You have to close the border and then deal with the ones here, or you'll just have a continuous flow. And by the way, every illegal that's accepted by this country and not kicked out is an insult and an affront to every person who ever did it properly to get into this country. It's expensive, it's a long process, and it's a slap in the face to new Americans who are law-abiding and do it properly. If you give anything, and I'm talking to you, Governor Perry, anything to illegal immigrants, them or their families, it is an affront, and it is against natural justice, and it's un-American to reward illegal behavior.
You know, I used to think Texas was just a perfect all-American state. You know, the cowboys, and they like cattle and beef and the oil, and boy, oh boy, have they elected some absolute socialist to office. Now, how would you address taking a page regarding, are you in favor of the income tax, fair tax, flat tax? What would be your opinion on that, Senator?
Well, first of all, I think we need to fundamentally reform our tax code, and not – that doesn't mean tweaking it. That means fundamentally reforming it. When you say, are you for the flat tax or the fair tax, there is a fundamental problem therein, because there are fair taxes, various versions.
Okay.
And I believe there's possibly various versions of the flat tax as well. Do I think there should be – am I against the income tax? Yes. Do we completely have to reform how we collect taxes at the federal level? Yes. Will I pick between the fair and the flat tax at this moment? No, because I don't think either one has been settled to a cast in stone yet. But we obviously have to win the argument that the tax system has to be reformed, completely reformed, without a doubt.
How do you start that, though? Okay, you're the newbie. You've been elected and sworn in. Obviously, you're going against some powerful people that are obviously going to try to beat that issue down.
Oh, yes. I mean, and the income tax is definitely a sacred cow for many people in D.C. The way you do it is that really has to come from the populace, not from politicians, because of the machine in D.C. there has to be a rebellion of individuals to scare the bejesus out of politicians, because most aren't going to have a strong backbone. Let's face it, they're not known for strong backbones. You scare the living daylights out of them, and then they'll support fair tax or flat tax, because, you know, it's going to be one lone person pissing in the wind, or two or three people, because the vested interest in D.C. want to keep it just as it is. Really, D.C. is like kind of, as I said, like Brussels. It's a different planet than the rest of the country.
All right. Well, what about now? The recent news, the scandal that broke out, where elected officials had insider knowledge and were able to make millions upon millions upon millions of dollars with this insider knowledge. If you or I, as ordinary citizens, had the same knowledge and did the same thing and made the same money, we'd be behind bars.
Yeah, of course. And what I think what the biggest problem is that they deny it. Let's see. You went to D.C. and you were fairly moderately income. You went to D.C. four terms ago. You've been in for 24 years, and you're suddenly worth millions and millions of dollars. How did that happen? Luck? And they'll just make up some excuses. And it's just, how stupid do they think we are? I mean, granted, some of them marry well. They go single, they marry well. But really...
Well, they must think we're pretty stupid when they asked the one guy he mentioned about they rented up the upstairs or something like that. It must have been some expensive rent.
Oh, yeah. Because, let's face it, D.C., because, as I said, just like Brussels, it's a capital city. It's very expensive because every person in D.C. on Capitol Hill is on expense account. So it drives the prices up. If you take away a lot of the expense accounts, that would lower the prices. And I've seen politicians make excuses saying, I have to earn lots of money because it's expensive to have a house in D.C. and your constituency and go back and forth and everything else. But, the way you solve that is you change the nature of D.C., really.
Well, what about then having the senators and legislatures, instead of being able to determine their pay through their legislation and they're deciding what they're going to get paid and how many raises they get, the pay is then decided by the individual states. The people that vote for them then decide how much they get paid and what their expenses are.
Well, or you could do the opposite and say we pay senators and representatives more money, but they cannot make money from any other source when they're serving.
Oh, that's interesting. All right, we got another caller on the air here. We've got Mark Wing. Good afternoon. You're on Southern Sense with Annie and Mike and our guest Andrew Ian Dodge. Who am I speaking to?
This is Daniel.
Hi, Daniel.
Hello. Yes, I had a question for Andrew Ian Dodge regarding whether he may be aware of some economic development projects being facilitated by the University of Maine Advanced Structures and Composites Center with their huge wind turbines that are being researched by the Deep Sea Wind Consortium and the Ocean Energy Institute, for instance. And I call in because I've talked with some of the conservative radio shows on Blog Talk before about how anhydrous ammonia may be a future energy or fuel that can store electricity and be an electrosynthetic fuel. And it looks like there's some potential for Maine to have a hand in bringing forward this technology as well, because these large wind turbines might be able to produce this ammonia offshore and then bring it in to land. So it could help us move away from foreign oil and help our national security over time. And just was curious if the candidate had any knowledge or experience with hearing about this topic before.
Well, I know that they've been pushing alternative power from Maine. In fact, we have a problem of their trying to stick up a whole bunch of big wind turbines in northern Maine, and the locals not wanting it because it will be a blight on the landscape and not really produce much power. I'm keen on alternative power and wave power and whatever. Why does the government have to be involved? Why can't private concerns be involved? Just like the same reason you should get rid of NASA and privatize space. You have people in their back garden, various parts of this country, putting rockets into low-level space off their own backs. Yes, it costs NASA millions and millions of dollars, and they can't even produce something, so we have to rely on the Russians. Why don't you privatize those things, get the government out of the way, and get private industry involved? Was the government involved in the invention of the Apple computer? No. Was the government involved in the invention of the Dyson, you know, turbo vac, the thing that uses tornadoes to suck up the dirt? No. They have fans that don't have any things in the middle of it. Government had nothing to do with that. That is individual innovation. The problem when government gets involved and starts picking winners and losers, it picks winners like Solyndra. There's a huge history of this. Or the Chevy Volt. Yeah, that's good value for money. And do you realize that a comparable size car that's a diesel gets better mileage than a Chevy Volt? Diesel technology already exists, and it's always had better mileage. Why are we spending taxpayers' money bailing out a company and helping them produce something which gets us to a point where we already are? I don't get that. And America should, to Joe and Anwar, should get out of the way and produce nuclear plants like, let's say, France. We have enough in North America to supply our oil needs and our energy needs, and the reason that we get foreign oil and foreign supplies is it's a form of foreign aid. It keeps the Saudi government in power. It keeps some of these other people in power. We can fund ourselves. We have all the oil and all the energy needs we need in this country. And the only reason we don't exploit them is because of other interests and most to do with foreign policy.
Now, it's funny you brought up the Chevy Volt. I don't know if you've caught any of the news items the last day, but are you aware GM is now offering Chevy Volt owners the option that GM will buy the car back if they're not satisfied?
Because it was exploding, because there was a side impact, and it was sitting in the
garage, yeah, in the lot, yeah,
in the DOT lot, and it blew up. Yeah, and you know that there are people who bought Volts that are trading them in for Corvettes. Not actually kidding.
And so one of the horrible things about what we're talking about, and this really stems back once again. From how we have been for so many years powerless, here's this huge, huge so-called stimulus bill or bailout. You can label these things anything you want. You can call a person a hero who is not a hero. I mean, but the bottom line is that here is basically the government basically purchases a automotive maker. And I'm a very big supporter of GM as well as individual middle class workers. But the bottom line is, where does the government get off pushing this car down people's throat? Okay, now here it's exploding. I mean, what kind of douchebags put out a huge company like that, can engineer a product and put that on the line? It's just blowing up.
Yeah, but you know if they didn't have the government involved. You remember what happened the last time that there was a car that had the same problem? The company went under. I mean, that happened to various automotive companies. Now, see, okay, my last name is Dodge. I have a particular affection for Chrysler because they own the Dodge brand. I think they should have gone bankrupt. I don't think there should have been any government bailouts of either car company. We have a system in this country called the chapter series 11 and the various other machinations, and we need to allow companies to go out of business and reform themselves, because when you throw money at something that's failing, that just prolongs its potential failure, and when it fails, ultimately it's going to be far worse. Doesn't matter whether it's a financial sector, an automotive country, or a currency like the euro.
Thanks for the thoughtful answers. And just to clarify, there is a little bit of a difference with the advanced composites wind turbines. They're so big that they can be placed very far away from the shoreline and are not seen from the shoreline. So it might be a helpful new thing for Maine future down the way.
Oh, no, I like wave technology. Some of those things that they're proposing, the underwater ones, where they'll be on channels, those are good. I'm not sure because I've read about this quite a bit, because in the UK there are proposals to stick these, and other parts of Europe, to stick wind turbines out in the middle of the sea and, you know, ruining views and danger to shipping and everything else. But if it's wave technology and it's under the water and no one sees it and it doesn't hurt shipping, yeah, great idea.
Okay. You know, one of the things I want to also ask you, Senator, we're kind of winding down. I want to again throw you on the hot seat. I want to know about
you. Oh, goody,
you.
I like being here.
Okay,
I love
being there. Okay, well, Annie, do you mind if I throw a few questions at him, a little rapid fire?
No, go ahead.
Okay, number one, in your individual house, do you recycle?
Yes.
Number two.
We have to.
Who is your favorite?
Town offices.
Okay, well, that's good. Who is your favorite? Well, wait a minute. Okay, what kind of car do you drive?
Subaru WRX.
Okay. What is your favorite brand of soft drink?
Coke Zero.
What is your favorite beer?
Hampshire Special Ale. Which sounds like it's English, but it's actually manufactured in Maine. Hampshire Special Ale.
Okay, I'm actually going to look that up, see if we get it in our club now. Who is your favorite book? Say, one of your favorite books that you have read, say, in the last 5 years.
Last 5 years? Oh, that's tough, because I read books to review, so that's going to be difficult. I can't actually name my favorite book in the last 5 years, but I can name one of my favorite books of all time, The Complete Works of H.P. Lovecraft.
Okay, who is your favorite, say, U.S. president in history of our lifetime?
Of our lifetime.
Of our lifetime, not of since George Washington was elected. Of our lifetime.
Ronald Reagan.
Favorite congressperson of all time?
Barry Goldwater.
Favorite U.S. senator? We know it's not Olympia Snowe.
On blank.
No. Favorite U.S. senator? That's a tough one. I can't think of a senator who's consistent. I'm not sure. Wasn't Barry Goldwater also a senator?
Yeah, I think he was a senator when he ran. I believe he was a senator. Okay, now my final two questions, and they're simple ones. Your favorite fast food and your favorite sit-down restaurant to eat?
Favorite fast food is sushi. Favorite restaurant to eat?
Sit down place, you know, we get way in.
Italian, a variation on Italian food, whatever that may happen to be.
Okay. I like to ask questions like that because one of the reasons, I think for the most part, Tea Party people are just like us. They're moms and dads, they're brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles. They're people who have been over the, last 15 years have struggled towards the end of the Clinton administration, as well as all of moron George Bush's administration and Chocolate King. Well, go ahead.
I actually disagree with you. I think there is no – I think they're undefinable because, as I said, I did my 8,000-mile, 26-day trip across the country, and I met everybody from people who – farmers to PhD, to people with doctorates, to, you know – military types, to creative types, to musicians, to members of the cloth. There is no fundamental definition of a Tea Party person. There are people who are involved in the Tea Party movement who've always been on the right, and there are those who were who started out, you know, when they were in their teens as a socialist and moved across. I think trying to quantify the Tea Party movement as some definition is impossible.
Well, I think that's the beauty of the Tea Party movement, because I don't know if you knew, Andrew, that I'm one of the five founders here of the Beaufort Tea Party in South Carolina, and we formed in May of 2009, about a month after you formed. Thomas did have another question to come back on, but every time I unmute his mic, I get an echo, so I'm sorry, Thomas. We got a problem with your connection here. But, Andrew, I want to thank you for coming on. This 90 minutes flew like anything.
Well, as you can probably tell, I don't mind talking. In my previous history, in a previous life, I was a rock disc jockey at Colby College in Waterville, Maine. I've done many radio interviews. And I think, as a politician, there's some people said, oh, he really likes to talk. That's a good thing. You need a politician who you can sit down with. Fundamentally, if you're electing someone, you want to be able to say, not necessarily he's someone I want to have a beer with, but he's someone that I could see myself sitting around the table over a beer, over a glass of tea, and have a chat. And I know that every single thing they say is not memorized, it's not field-tested, and it comes from something other than, what can I say to these people to make them like me? I guarantee, if I took every one of your listeners, I have said something in my lifetime to piss everybody off. Because I speak my mind. Sometimes I annoy people, sometimes I don't. Hopefully, as I get older, I'm slightly less.
I'm going to be the first to offer you $100. If you get elected, my friend, and you go over and slap Mitch McConnell right across the puss, I'll give you a $100 bill, because I'll tell you, it's sickening to see what some of these socialists have done to our to the very good conservative movement. That a lot of it was an illusion, but there was a strong group of conservatives within the GOP who have just been crushed by these absolute liberal Democrats who infiltrated our party with people like George Bush.
I think you're being kind of unfair. I think that we need, and everybody needs, whether or not I was running, you need to do research into people's pasts. Now, as I said, I may have changed the nuances of some of the things I've said over the past 30 years. And I probably was a bit more combative when I was in my 19 at Colby than I am now. However, consistently, my values have not changed. The things I'm saying now to you are the same things I said in college, are the same things I said in my book, Statism Sucks 2.0. They are exactly the same thing. You got to worry when you look at a politician and they're a born-again, when they're a born-again Tea Partier, when they're a born-again conservative, when they're a born-again flat tax or whatever. If they are, that means that they go whichever way the wind blows. And the problem with the Republican Party, as it stands, is that these people are fundamentally go whichever way the wind blows. I would rather someone stand up and fall on their principles and what they believe in and stay consistent than to just succumb to focus groups, what the party tells them to say, and what they think to get elected, because then you can't trust them. And if you can't trust the people that lead you, who can you trust? I mean, ultimately, there is a reason that Congress is thought of so badly.
All right, Andrew, we've got like 1 minute left. I do have two people that wanted to ask more questions, but we've run out of time. We're down to our very last minute.
I'm happy to come back
minute.
Anytime you want. I mean, really, I am yours to get in touch. I love discussing this sort of thing. After all, I'm the type of guy who used to voluntarily go sit around the table with people varying political degrees and speak long into the night over a beer about politics and philosophy and how we govern ourselves. Politics, it's my sport. I don't like sport. I enjoy it. I'm fascinated by it. And any time I get to talk with intelligent people who are knowledgeable, I'd love to do it. It's my pleasure and my honor to be asked to come to talk to you.
I thank you so much. We will be back on Tuesday. We will have Tim Barton of Wall Builders. And on Friday, we'll have John Dummett, who is running for president on our show. Want to thank everyone for listening in. Our chat room has been very lively, and I'm sorry we couldn't get down to the last two questions here, the last two callers, but we will be back on Tuesday. Want to thank our guest and my co-host, Cool Mike. So
donate, please. We need all the money we can get. Please donate at Dodge for Senate. Please, please.
Yes, Dodge for Senate. It's up on the show page, and it's also in the chat room. So
no, don't take out. You don't take down walls with no money.
Well, that's for sure. Thank you, Mr. Senator and Annie. It's been a pleasure.
Bye-bye. Thank you very much.
Take care. And everyone have a happy and healthy and safe weekend. I want to thank you for listening to Seven Cents here on Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.webs.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American.
American.